Right, so here we are. Welcome to the very first Art Connects 19 podcast, recorded the day it's going out live. And here I am in John Adams Street. Where better to do a podcast, where better to start a podcast about art than at the RSA? That's the Royal Society of the Arts and Manufacturing Commerce, I think. And I'm absolutely delighted. I've been a fellow of the RSA now for about 5 years, and I'm really delighted to be sat here with Matthew Taylor. Hello, Matthew Taylor.
Hello, welcome to my office. and it's actually the Royal Society for the Encouragement of Arts, Manufacturers and Commerce. So you're pretty close.
I knew I should have written it down. I do it quite well on the doorstep because it's written on a pillar, isn't it? And I can kind of use that as auto cue.
RSA is fine.
18th century.
Even though it's an insurance company.
So we're going to do these podcasts on the A to Z of art. A to Z. So this one is the art of art, I think. So we're going to talk about art. We're going to talk about the arts. We're going to talk about the A and the RSA. Now, I hope you don't mind, Matthew, but you're going to be a guinea pig here, because what I want to do is stress test everything we're doing with Steamco, because we've been doing what we're doing for, 8 years in a fairly low-tech way, low-profile way, last 2 or 3 years in more anger. And we think we've come through phase one now, which is about establishing profile and building a network in education, in business, and in broader society.
Can we just clarify at this stage that when you say we, you actually mean... you.
We mean we as a bunch of advisors, a bunch of teachers, a bunch of parents. I sent 1,300 emails out this morning, and a whole bunch of people came back this morning. And said,
I wasn't making
brilliant.
A point. I was just clarifying in case anybody thought that you had a kind of large workforce behind you.
I've got a very
you are a heroic
workforce.
Individual a surrounded workforce. By a fan club.
Yeah, to a certain degree, yeah, but if we need to run Steamco Day next week, we'd have 40 parents
there. Yeah, of course,
there.
Exactly. So, yes.
Yeah, of course. So, come and have a go if you think it hard enough is probably the sort of the sum of that one, yeah. So what I'd like to do is just run you through a 10-minute sort of elevator pitch, the slowest elevator in the world, you know, the really slow one in the Empire State Building.
Right.
Just to tell you a bit about Steamco, where we've come from, because we had a brief chat the other week, and you said, what is it you do again? I think I like it, but what do you do?
Okay.
Because I need you
to
like
this. Is this part of the 10 minutes, by the way?
This is part of the 10 minutes.
Okay,
yeah.
Good.
I need you to like this, Matthew, and if you don't, I want to know why, because I need the other 30,000 fellows to sort of buy into this. So we're going to talk about the Art Connects Festival, which is essentially a festival of creative schools, work and lives. And it's a celebration, really. It's a celebration of the power of this killer combination of creativity, technology, and people. And that will all become obvious. Saturday, we're doing something with The Guardian. We've got a Guardian reader collaboration, which we'll sort of finish on. And it kind of starts with The Guardian, because 5 years ago, almost now, The Guardian ran an article where we launched Steamco, at an event at the Royal Institution. And the heading of that article was, I just talk quickly till people say yes. So do me a favor during this podcast, because I'm under time pressure. If I talk too quickly, just make signs.
I talk too quickly as well, so it's just, you know.
Well, I like quick you then on that one. So The Guardian said, I talk quickly till people say yes. And that's what happened, because 8 years ago, I saw the TED Talk, Ken Robinson's TED Talk. We all know about that. And obviously the RSA have got a brilliant animated version of that. And I read half a book by this bloke, Guy Claxton. Professor Guy Claxton wrote a book called What's the Point of School? And that's the theme I want to go back to. But when we were talking to him about that, he said, look, Nick, as parents and other carers, whether in business or society or schools, our job with our kids is to help them understand what they want to be great at and to help them follow that dream. And not many people are going to argue with that. The third thing I did was go to a festival, Camp Festival, and we'll come back to festivals, because I know you've got a festival story to share with us. And at that festival, I saw a whole bunch of creative people in a field, and I thought, fantastic, House of Fairy Tales. Spoke quickly to them, and they said yes, and they let me use the name Little House of Fairy Tales to run a festival like that in my kids' school in Paddington, St. Saviour's C of E Primary down there in Paddington. And basically, 40, 50 parents came in who don't always get involved in school creativity days. We had a whole load of activities. We wrapped the school in bunting. We made rockets with a bloke looking like Eisenberg Kingdom Brunel. We got a machine off eBay for spin painting, which actually was the spin painting machine from Chromapeer, which was quite nice. We taught kids to play ukulele. We had dads in rolling newspapers to make bridge structures. We got 30 Lego robot crocodiles and did coding on Raspberry Pis. And it went pretty well. We did it for 5 or 6 years until my kids became teenagers, when they're now obviously too embarrassed to be seen dead with me. We put all that stuff in a trailer, and we now hump that around the UK, helping school communities run Steamco days, whether it's Cornwall, Carlisle, Newcastle, Bradford, Leeds. So
how many have you done?
How many we've done? Probably about nearly 100 half-day sessions, full-day sessions. The full-day sessions, probably about 20 or 30. And you know what? It's not about numbers. It's about proving or learning the lessons so we can prove it can scale. Mm-hmm. And because that's the challenge. It's finding more people like me and rolling that out. We'll come back to that.
We'll come back to scale.
Definitely. Scale is the big one because that's phase two. So what do we do? Well, really, we're on a mission to put creativity first in schools, work and lives. Big part of our agenda is I'm convinced that not many people give a damn about schools. Not many people give a damn about education. And Prince Charles did an event, the Duke of Cornwall did an event at the Royal Albert Hall last year, and Lenny Henry was quoted as saying something quite interesting. He said, good people are saying good and sensible things about children and the arts, but it just feels like no one really cares. And I'll be honest with you, Lenny Henry on the way in, I was on the doorstep, and doorstep the event. He was one of the grumpiest people, actually, and I suspect he's very, very frustrated, actually, by people talking and not enough
doing. He's also a West Brom fan, and that is enough to make anybody pretty miserable most of the time. But anyway, carry on.
But you're a West Brom fan as well, aren't you?
Yeah, actually, he says he's a West Brom fan, but I've actually sat with him watching a West Brom game. He doesn't really seem to know what's going on, so I don't know what it is, more emotional, more heart than head, I suspect. But anyway, go on.
Well, I'll be honest with you, that's the limit of my football conversation as well. So let's move swiftly on. So basically, what we want to see is society collaborate for creativity, come together and actually do something. There's been enough talk. So Ken Robinson's all very inspiring. I find it quite inspiring. I don't know how much of it is right or wrong, and it's got me into all sorts of trouble for standing by that. But this bloke is fascinating, Seth Godin. Now, when the most respected person in the world of business, the world of advertising, which is a business that's about making people do something they might not want to do, or buy something they might not want to buy, when he stands up and writes a paper about education or a book about it, he doesn't call it Creative Schools, as Ken Robinson did, or he called it Stop Stealing Dreams. And that's bang on, because that makes people stop and think, hang on, is that what they're doing? Because in some cases it is. Stop Stealing Dreams, what is school for? And another book by Seth, The Icarus Deception, talks about art. And in the front of that, he says, art is frightening. Art isn't pretty. Art isn't about paint. Art isn't something you hang on the wall. It's what we do when we're truly alive, which gets us back into that creativity is what makes us human. Now, do you watch telly? Did you see this Elton John ad he made for John Lewis?
Yeah.
Good. Because I spoke to somebody yesterday who hadn't. I had to kind of describe it. Elton John gets a piano for Christmas.
Although I don't think most people watched it on telly. It was viral, wasn't it?
It did
YouTube.
Go pretty viral, didn't it? And there were two viral versions, actually.
The very phrase, do you watch television, dates you, do you know that?
It does, it? Doesn't it? Yeah. Do you watch it in colour or black and white?
Well, exactly. Yeah.
And when the budget's on, do you have to go around to your mates to watch it on BBC?
I remember when the first colour television arrived. My grandfather was an engineer at Dunlop, and the first one arrived in his street in Crosby. He thought the colour. I often talk about this because I talk about why is it people are so pessimistic about technology nowadays. And I said my grandfather was an engineer at Dunlop, and he helped to invent Don Lepillo, which I think was the first foam rubber with regular circles, so you could cut it up for any use.
That was for mattresses. Oh, for pillows and mattresses.
Yeah. Anyway, for him, the colour television was one step forward on the inexorable road to colonies on Mars. So it's like, you know, he was so enthusiastic
next
about
step two, what, sorry?
Colonies on Mars.
Oh, right.
You know, for him, this kind of rather modest. I mean, the first colour televisions were shit, to be honest. I mean, they were just. They
black
were kind
and white
of.
Was really sharp,
they'd like you,
wasn't it?
They'd like you take an acid or something. It's just like all these weird, vibrant colours. You couldn't really see what was going on. But anyway, even then, he was like so enthusiastic. And you look at all the technology now, and it's also amazing, but yet, do people have my grandfather's enthusiasm? No, they just think the robots are coming for my job and it's going to give even more power to not bloody Zuckerberg. Anyway, back to Elton John.
Love that. Okay, so you've seen the Elton John film. Give me a word that was about. That film was about what? A word. This is what I asked 20,000 kids before Christmas.
What was that
just
about?
Just a word.
Music.
Music, okay.
Is that the wrong answer?
There's no wrong answer. This is a brainstorm. Every answer is a correct answer, because if it was really rubbish, it might have prompted somebody else.
And it was fundamentally about emotion. I mean, it was an attempt to get you to buy John Lewis stuff on the basis of the emotional appeal of the idea that Elton John's mum bought him a piano, and as a consequence of that, he became a superstar. And
funny enough, it was the worst.
And it was a Christmas present. And if it hadn't been for the Christmas present, he wouldn't have ended up being the greatest rock, you know, one of the greatest musicians of our time.
I don't know how many people post-rationalised it to that degree, but most people thought it was an abject failure in terms of an ad for John Lewis, and it was a great bit of PR for Elton John with a tour coming up and a film coming out.
Yeah, he's very canny.
And when you look at that film, I thought, wow, this is massive budget. I didn't realise that there was an Elton John film coming out. All they've done was take some key rushes out of that and to reverse engineer an ad out of it. Yeah, so it's very clever. So I ask kids all over the country what it's about, and some say art, love, careers, money, pianos, whatever. And for me, it is about art. I mean, he was given the gift of art. He's made money out of that. He's made people happy. He's connected. It's my party. I'll cheat if I want to. I don't answer it with a word. I answer it with a Seth Godin phrase. Art is what we call it when what we do connects us. If I ask people what art is, what do you think art is? I should have asked you that before I gave you the answer, really, shouldn't I? But what if I said to you, art is what?
Oh, that's a good
question. Because you're the head of the RSA. What is art? What's his art thing in there? What's the arts for you, isn't it?
I guess art is... for me, I guess art, in the end, is the search for the transcendent. So art is great art. I mean, I think there's a difference. I think, by the way, I do think there's a really big difference, and we can't ever find the right way of talking about it, between kind of art for participation and art, which is great art. And it's weird, you know, in sport, people completely understand that. They completely understand there's elite sport and then there's mass sport. We don't get kids to play sport at school because we think they're all going to become, you know, the next Raheem Sterling or whatever it might be. You know, we do it because it's good for them. But there's a kind of peculiar thing in the arts world, which is that when I say to artists, well, are you doing this, is this about great art or is this about social change? They go, oh, no, I'm not, you know, that's not, I can't have that conversation at all. You know, now all art has got to be understood for its intrinsic value. And I think, really? But okay, fine. So putting that to one side, if you're talking about great art, as it were, you're talking about art by people who've trained and are inspired and all of that, I think it's about the search for the transcendent. It's a search for that moment when you are somehow connected to the currents of the universe or the world in a way which is inexplicable.
Okay, tell us the history of the RSA in a nutshell then, because there's an interesting angle in this, and if you don't come up with the right answer, I will prompt you. So give us a sense, this elevator pitch of the RSA and the story, how it founded, where it came from.
So the RSA came from a group of men who felt that the world was changing fast.
And you mean men there, I presume, don't you?
Yeah. Group of men who felt that the world was changing fast, but that we weren't necessarily directing innovation and investment towards the issues that most mattered to the country. I wouldn't even say society. I wouldn't say they were kind of like progressive. It was really national. They just felt that some of the most important issues for our country weren't getting the attention they needed to get. And some of the skills that we most needed for our country weren't getting the attention then. So what they did was they developed something called premiums, which were prizes to encourage people to try to solve these problems which weren't otherwise going to be solved.
Because give us an example of the kind of problems you're talking
about.
Well,
like crops that we couldn't grow in Britain, so we were dependent on getting those crops from abroad. And of course, you know, in the 18th century, that was a dangerous thing because there was a lot of war at sea. Or skills like, you know, technical drawing, for example, where they didn't feel that enough of that was being done. Or as it turned on later on, you know, problems like, you know, how do you have ways of cleaning chimneys that don't involve sending small children up them and all that. So, and I think...
And did they solve those problems through their initiatives?
Solve some of them.
Right.
Yeah. But it's very difficult to say, isn't it? I get a lot of grief from my trustees and various other people, and I understand it, saying, you know, demonstrate your impact. The problem is, in my world, impact is hard to prove. So some of those premiums, if you look at them, and we're actually going to have a new history of the RSA published this year, which is a brilliant, brilliant book. Some of those problems, it wasn't actually, in the end, an idea that was sent into the RSA or an idea that got an RSA premium or award that solved the problem. But who knows, the consciousness raising that went on in having that award, that people were bidding for and people seeing the ideas. So some of the things, yes, it was our ideas that ended up being taken forward, and some of the institutions in us, as many institutions we have in British society, were came out of the RSA. But other ones, you know, one suspects that we created the climate in which they were solved. And you know, that's been the RSA ever since, really, is that we have always been about saying, well, what are the problems that aren't getting the attention they need to be getting? And is there a way in which we can address those problems which will make it more likely that we'll get the right solutions? And, you know, the way we do that has changed, the focus has changed, the world has changed. I mean, we do a lot more work now which is around government, what government does nationally and locally. And sometimes people say to me, well, you know, all this focus on government, you know, that's not true to the RSA's origins, which is about, you know, commerce and arts. And I say, yeah, but the fact is, you know, in the 1760s, the welfare state didn't exist, you know. So, of course, they didn't talk about public policy in 1760 because it would have been no one you were talking about. So as the world changes, we have to change. You know, we didn't do much work about education in our early years, and education's become more and more important part of what we do. We did host the first ever exhibition of contemporary art in Britain, was here at the RSA. We wouldn't do that now because you know, since then there have been all, you know, there's been the whole growth of lots and lots of museums and galleries.
We're quite good at doing
who,
that.
Who do it themselves. Yeah. So, you know, another thing about the RSA is people sometimes again criticise me and say, well, you know, we're not doing what we did, you know, at the beginning. Why don't we do more work on manufacturing? And I said, well, because, you know, when we started, manufacturing inventions were actually done by people in their sheds. And we could kind of be part of that. And we had the kind of resources to encourage people to do different kinds of thinking in their sheds. To be honest, now the vast majority of manufacturing, you know, when it comes to consulting big problems, is done by huge corporations with huge budgets or governments that invest billions of pounds. So what do we do about manufacturing? We're looking at local manufacturing. We're looking at makerspaces. We're looking at circular economy. So the RSA has had to reinvent itself constantly. In fact, I think that one of the strengths of the organisation is that because we have to constantly reinvent ourselves, it puts us in the right frame of mind for trying to solve other problems.
That was a great answer. It was the wrong one, of course. It wasn't the one I was after, but it's absolutely fine. I love that. Coffee shops. Is there an angle of people meeting coffee shops, and was it inclusive or elitist?
Yeah, we did a piece of branding work about 18 months ago. And we're trying to get to the core of the RSA. And the two words that came up were convening and change. And then from that, we developed, and I forgot, actually, this is art for you. We were sitting in the room, and I suddenly thought, I just know how to express this. The new RSA strapline should be welcome to change. Welcome to, it's brilliant, convening and change. Welcome to change, mm-hmm. It's warm. I went back to my missus, and I said, look, welcome to change. I thought this is the whole future. And then we took it to focus groups, and we thought it was complete pants. So anyway, you know, just got to accept that. We're thinking again about what our strap line might be now, so we'll have to test that as well. But anyway, convening and change, those are our two big ideas. And the coffee shop is convening. It's bringing people together, and that's what we do.
Wasn't it men gathering in coffee shops?
It started in a coffee shop down the road, and now we've got a beautiful new coffee shop here called Rothmells.
Oh, it started in one particular coffee shop, did it?
In Covent Garden, yeah.
Oh, right, okay.
And called Rothmells, which is why it is the new coffee shop down on minus two. It's called Rothmells.
So there was an art thing there as well, wasn't there? Actually buying paintings?
That was part, we had drawing prizes, yeah.
Because a version of the story I heard, which I was obviously trying to sort of get out of you, was the idea that wasn't an amount of money set aside on a regular basis to buy pieces of art that then formed a collection?
No.
And a bunch of people had a hissy fit and went off and started the Royal Academy?
No, you're getting a couple of things confused there. So we would have premiums for people to do drawings. Particularly young people to do drawings, and there's some lovely drawings in our archives and stuff like that. That's something we don't do anymore, but nobody was giving prizes for drawing, particularly technical drawing, drawings of nature and things like that. And also, of course, a lot of people sent in drawings as their design solutions for things. And separately, there was a group of people amongst the fellowship whose focus was on encouraging public interest in art, who did organise the first ever contemporary arts exhibition here. And then that group of people there was some kind of schism within that group and various factions. And yes, it is true that I think the Royal College came out of one of those schisms.
Royal College or the Royal Academy?
Royal Academy, I think. But also the I think the Royal College of Art as well. I don't know, to be honest. I have read our history a couple of times, but I've not got a great brain for remembering those kind of things. But anyway.
No, it's just funny because I would rather to add this to the podcast, but I've got a Royal Academy story in that a few years ago, there was a fantastic Richard Rodgers exhibition on there, and they had 50,000 Lego bricks from Lego. And right. I don't know how much Lego building you've done, but there's nothing worse than doing a red wall and running out of red bits and having to put a blue bit in. But that wasn't an issue because they had
I just thought you were just the kind of person who think it was brilliant to have to put a blue brick in a red wall.
No, that would... Oh, OCD,
in fact, it's an interesting OCD insight into your psychology that you can't stand the idea of a blue brick in a red wall. That completely destroys your credibility. I think if I was to do a kind of questionnaire and I was to say, ask people, do you think Nick Corson's the kind of bloke who thinks it's a problem to put a blue brick in a red wall? I cannot think out of 100 that a single person would think that was a problem for you.
I wouldn't sleep that night, Matthew. I really wouldn't. So we had this fantastic day, and I asked them if we could borrow these Lego bricks when they finished them for Steam Code out the road in Panton. They said, well, a bit short notice, get back to us next year. So I gave them 3 months notice, asked again. Got an email saying, oh, we'll put it to the committee. And I got a message, I emailed about a month later and said, how's it going? No, you can't have them. Oh, okay, what's that? Well, they're in a warehouse in Slough or something. I said, well, not to worry, I've got a man with a van. No, you can't have them. Well, why not? Well, they're quite valuable. Well, we're insured. Well, you can't have them because we'd have to send some people. Oh, well, we can pay them. Well, you can't have them full stop. And I said, oh, it's a bit of a shame because, you know, we've got a community here. They pay their lottery money. We've had a lottery grant for some project. You know, can we just please just borrow it? And it got banked back. So I got blacked by the Royal Academy's email service.
So where are those Lego bricks
now? Being a stroppy old devil. So
where are those bricks now?
Well, they're still in the warehouse in Slough. They
That's shocking. That's shocking.
Well, thank you.
Mine, fortunately, they will. I mean, think about they're like. They're, I mean, when the apocalypse happens, Lego bricks will survive, won't they? Lego bricks and
well, if anybody bombs Slough, it's cockroaches. Lego bricks.
I mean, the only things left on the earth when climate change has had its way will be cockroaches and Lego bricks. So they'll evolve. Presumably, the cockroaches will evolve.
Well, did you go and see the IOX?
To be able to use Lego. No, we've got to move on.
No, this is relevant.
We've got 10 minutes left. Go on.
Go to the Royal Academy, IOX show. There's an Akadol Cortina with a sunroof open, and half full of Lego.
Uh-huh.
And there's a sign up saying, Lego. Can we have some of your Lego? And I tweeted the Royal Academy and IOX and said, no, you can't have my Lego because you wouldn't let me borrow yours. And IOA retweeted it, which I thought was lovely. So that's the power of how art connects. Yeah. So art is what we call it, and what we do might connect. So Steamco, what we do is we connect our kids with their art, and we connect our communities with their schools. And
so shall I tell you something really interesting, which you won't forget? So I've got a brilliant colleague here called Laura Partridge, and she's doing a piece of work called Pinball Kids, which is around kids being excluded from school. And she was saying to me the other day that the tentative finding they're coming to, and she probably said to me, don't tell anybody. So fortunately, this is a podcast. No one listens to podcasts, so it's fine. It's like basically just you and me, isn't it? But she said that what they're finding is that the schools and the places that do best in keeping kids in school and not just throwing them out on the streets or into kind of inadequately funded pupil referral units are the ones that have three sets of relationships they've got right. The relationship between teachers and pupils, the relationship between the school and the parents, and the relationship between the school and wider civil society and other public agencies. Get those three sets of relationships right, and you're much more likely to be able to help the children with the biggest challenges and problems. Anyway, back to you.
There's a podcast in that in itself, isn't there? Yeah, absolutely. So delighted then, given our Steamco model of bringing communities into schools, particularly primary schools, but increasingly secondary, we're delighted a few years ago to get a Times Education Supplement Award for our work at St Saviour's around community and collaboration, and now we're working with schools that get that award every year. So basically what Steamco does is we campaign, we celebrate, and we action creativity. So in terms of campaigning, retweeting stuff, working with the people like the Cultural Learning Alliance, members of the Creative Industries Federation, the RSA campaigns.
Can I just say, campaign, go back.
Go on.
No, go back, because we're looking at some slides. Campaign, celebrate, action. So you've got like two verbs.
I know, it needs a forward,
and a noun.
Is that jarring, is it?
Just a bit.
We'll have to brainstorm.
What do we do? We campaign, we celebrate, we action. I mean, that's like implementing it. That's like what people say when they're going through for a agenda, isn't it?
Maybe we should just ask your wife what she thinks.
Act. Campaign, celebrate, act.
Well, act is it?
Well, you see, you can't say act, can you? Because it's a particular type of. Anyway, go on.
It used to say advocate instead of campaign.
Oh, advocate, that's a bit.
I know, nobody understands that, do they?
Anyway, go on.
That's why we're here.
Maybe that's good. Maybe it's jarring. It's jarring. It's jarring.
Thank you for this feedback.
So although it's interesting that you'll have two verbs and a noun, but you won't have a blue brick and a red wall of Lego bricks.
I didn't see it.
You're an enigma wrapped up in a paradox, aren't you, Nick
Austin? Two verbs and a noun, really.
You are an enigma wrapped up in a paradox. Go on.
This is why I'm asking clever people like you. I have to write that down. An enigma and a paradox. So in terms of celebrating, we run events. We've done events in Sunderland with Dominic Wilcox, events in Liverpool, Ken Robinson, events in Ironbridge. And last year we did a big thing in King's Cross, and again this year in West London. And action in creativity.
I like that. I like this when you do a list of places. And it reminds me of, I'm just making arts references here, because actually basically I'm a Philistine, but so I'm just going to crab in the very few arts references I've got. I went to see Kraftwerk. In the Southampton Gaumont, don't look for it now.
In 3D or back in the day?
No, this is back in the day.
Yeah.
And they had, it was great, it was a brilliant concert. I danced, I can't dance, but I danced to Kraftwerk. And they brought, right at the end, they brought on robots, you know, so they did the encore and they were there. And then they walked on and you thought, oh my God, it's not them, it's robots of them, which was in 1982.
Is that, well, five robots actually playing the keyboard?
Yeah,
there. Well, I've seen a video
looking
of
like it was, yeah. So 1982, that was like revolutionary. Anyway, they made one mistake though, which is they did their famous hit Autobahn. You know Autobahn?
Yeah, of
Bahn,
course.
Bahn, Bahn,
yeah,
the Autobahn. Now in Autobahn, I think there's like a list of German cities, and you know the way German is, you know, yeah. It really works, you know, from Berlin to Dusseldorf or whatever. The terrible mistake they made was they did the names of the places they toured in England, and it just like didn't
Radford,
work at all.
Luton,
from Hull to Grimsby on the Autobahn, yes. From Scunthorpe to Lincoln. And the thing is, you also knew there wasn't an Autobahn, because this is England. Yeah. You know, so actually it should have been from Scunthorpe to Grimsby on the A Road.
They should have asked Billy Bragg for the A20 or whatever it was. That's
well, he did, yeah, that's right. Anyway, go on.
So, So action and creativity is all about our STEAM Co Days, going into schools, doing half-day rocket sessions, rocking up with a trailer, doing STEAM Co Days, Art of Engineering Days. And in fact, we now do an Art of Robots Day, where we play that Kraftwerk song and that video, and all the kids dance robots, probably better than you did in that amazing venue that night. So the other angle to what we're doing was inspired by some research by the Daily Telegraph.
Why did the X Factor just come up for a moment?
Oh,
there?
Don't spoil it.
But why did it?
Well, you're going to find out now.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, so
I thought it might be subliminal advertising. I thought we'd be being paid by what's his name, that bloke who
you
runs.
It was just about to get good, did you?
Played by, you know, what's his name, to do subliminal advertising.
I don't know. I've never watched the X Factor in my life. So this bit was inspired by some research the Daily Telegraph did, and they asked a bunch of kids what they want to be when they grow up, and they said rich. And 4 out of 10 kids say they just want to be rich. So not everybody can win the X Factor.
Ah, there it is.
And not everybody can play for West Brom or Arsenal. So what we've got to do is tap into these kids, our children's obsession with celebrity. I did a workshop in a school in Birmingham the other week, and we had a video of this amazing young engineer, Mamtel Singhal, and she holds up a remote control car in the video. And then when I'm in the school, I get the remote control car, and these kids are in awe. Oh my God, that is the remote control car that was just on the telly. That's a famous remote control car. So inanimate objects can be famous and attract the obsession of kids.
That's interesting.
So what we want to do.
Although I do think the nature of celebrity has really changed, you know, with Instagram, and I think it's a different kind of idea than the idea. You and I grew up in a world where there were three channels. You and I grew up in a world where if somebody in our street was on television, they would be a celebrity for a month in the local.
I was on Peppermill at One once.
Well, Peppermill at One.
Yeah, that was Echo.
Exactly.
Yeah, and there was a massive waiting list for that.
Now, you know, you've got hundreds of Instagram, what are they called? Opinion formers, but you know what I mean.
Influencers.
Yeah, that's the one. You know, so I think celebrity is much more diffuse now.
It spikes and it's niched and it's long-tailed and all this sort of stuff, isn't it? And yeah, but it's still there. And I think people just need somebody to worship and idolise and get excited.
I started off recognising most of the people in reality TV programmes like Big Brother, and then I got to the stage where I didn't recognise any of the people.
What you mean is when there was only one.
And then I didn't, the celebrity of the jungle and all that kind of stuff. Then I got to the stage where I only recognised like two or three of them, who were the kind of old timers they got on to laugh at them. Now, it's not just that I don't recognise who the celebrities are, but I don't recognise the television programmes they're in, or I don't even recognise the...
I'm old, programmes.
Well, exactly. I don't recognise the internet platforms that they're famous for. It's like they just inhabit... Anyway, go on.
Grumpy old men this is becoming, isn't
it?
So what we need to do is tap into our kids' obsession with celebrity, and what we do with STEAM Co, we've got this thing called Inspirators, where we want to work with famous creative people to create activity packs that can be delivered by school communities, parents, on STEAM Co Days. So... Speakers of Schools, Robert Peston, great project, great initiative, but it's a one-hit wonder. It doesn't scale. Photo in the paper, newsletter, whatever.
Well, it scaled a bit. A lot of people do it.
Well, yeah, a lot of people do it, but unless they turn to technology. Scaling isn't a lot of people doing the different things in lots of schools. Scaling is the impact of one amazing person like Robert Peston or whoever reaching 35,000 schools. That's scale.
I think what Speakers for Schools would say in their defence, and I've done it a couple
of times. Oh, I'm not attacking Speakers for Schools.
No, so, I know. But in their defence, I think they'd say there's something special about the individual being in the room rather than watching another video.
You know. And good luck with the other 29,000 schools. So that's a very good point.
We're talking about scaling. We're going to come back to scaling in the remaining seven minutes.
So basically what we want to do is create activity packs with people like Martin Ware from Human League, who's one of our inspirators, with Dr. Sue Black, who's an incredible coder, with Jet Paul Smith, whatever. And we have done this with this young man. Do you know who that is, out of interest? Do you recognise that young chap?
No.
So that's Dominic Wilcox with crazy things on his ears. He's a young inventor. He was born in Sunderland. His mum and dad took him to Durham Cathedral when he was a little boy, and he was inspired by the stained glass. So when he got to the Royal College of Art to do a project for Mini to design a car of the future, he invented the stained glass driverless sleeper car.
Lovely.
Because you don't need to see where it's going because it's stained glass. That's been on the glass tank outside the Design Museum. I scamped it up in PowerPoint and said to UK Trade and Industry, you need to use this as part of your Creativity's Great Britain campaign, because Dominic Wilcox is on the David Letterman or Steve Colbert show in New York next Tuesday night, showing him his crazy gadgets. And they did. They took that PowerPoint, they turned it into a poster. Dominic Wilcox is now one of our inspirators. So we've developed an activity pack with Dominic so that the parents can sit with the kids, they watch a video the night before, they then sit with the kids and the kids come up with crazy inventions. And one of the most special moments for me was an immigrant lady coming up to me in a school in Cambridge, barely speaking English, and just thanked me because she actually used the word, she said, I did not know my daughter had this creativity in her.
Good.
Now, if we can use technology and creativity of people like Dominic, package it up and get that out into the whole country, we are going to hit that scale of 35,000 people. Now, how imagine a hero of yours, like someone like Robert Winston, being a football fan as you are. Robert Winston, you watch a video by Robert Winston or Paul Weller or
what's a famous person.
What's
Robert Winston?
Not Robert Winston.
Robert Winston's a guy.
I didn't mean Robert Winston. Who's that? Who's the lock, stock, and smoking barrels guy?
Vinnie Jones?
No.
I can't believe you've got Vinnie Jones and Robert Winston.
No, I didn't mean Vinnie Jones. Ray Winston.
Oh, Ray Winston, who also doesn't play football.
I know, but he did adverts to stop swearing and bad behaviour.
No, he mainly does gambling adverts, which
I know he does.
Absolutely shameful. Let's move on.
But Ray Winston did a brilliant ad to stop people swearing at Saturday football matches, and I'll send you a link to it. It's brilliant. The point is, he's the voice, he's the face, he's the celebrity of White Van Driver, Red Top newspaper, whatever. Those dads are the dads we need to engage, to your point a moment ago. So if we made a video by somebody like that they respect, who says, all right, lads, you're going to be making like fairies tomorrow in an improv workshop in your kid's school, don't laugh at the back. The kids then watch that video and that's the inspiration. Okay. Or Paul Weller teaches you, or Niall Rogers teaches you.
We've got so little time left. So I went to that exhibition.
So that exhibition being Matisse. So how can we connect with cultural institutions like Tate, like the V&A, Tristan doing great work down there at the moment? And here's an activity we developed that was delivered in a school inspired by a Matisse exhibition. Yeah. Now, I know all these galleries, they all have their PDFs and downloads, but it's just more noise for head teachers. We want to be the Trojan horse. We want to be a trusted portal to get these activities into schools. So basically, back to the John Lewis ad that I mentioned earlier, I saw that, ripped it off, and basically, did you ever see this version that we did?
No.
Of interest. Okay, so we'll play it now. So basically, I saw that ad and ripped it off and made a film called The Greatest Gift of Art.
Yeah.
Ripped this off, Elton John saw it, we put our own subtitles underneath, it had 50,000 views in an hour.
Yeah.
We then went on a tour of Britain, and it was just me, borrowed an SUV off Peugeot and drove from Cornwall to Carlisle, stopping in two schools a day, doing rocket workshops, talking to children about art.
I will do a workshop for your
kids. Yeah, if you have to have a whip round amongst the parents.
No,
or
I'll pay for
the
myself.
PTA.
It's going to be my daughter.
In Sheffield, I blagged a Lego train set from John Lewis. Yeah. In Bradford, I borrowed a big screen to do the presentation.
So let's get back to
it. I just need to go through this.
Go on.
It's 2 minutes.
Yeah.
And in this, in every day, I showed the kids a video of me when I was one with my first ever train set and my dad, and he showed me how to make a bridge and use my imagination. And we carried on to that. And at the very end of this, the little boy in Parkins Primary School in Leeds got a Lego train set, and he now plays with his dad. And the other day, I got a photo of his granddad coming around. So the boy, his dad, and the granddad are now playing train sets. So what we're doing with the Art Connects Festival is we had a week of events in schools across the country and a weekend in London. And we're now running this as an event, a festival, a virtual thing for the rest of the year. We had the Parliament launch. Yeah. We want to see schools across the whole country running small Our Art events. Nothing to do with us, a recital, a performance, an art show under the hashtag Our Art. We're going into Leeds and we're going to run a TED Talk Teach Meet type thing called The Art of Community for the parents, the kids,
the children.
But
I've got an idea for you. Go on.
And we're going to go to festivals. So that's it. And the punchline of this is Jeremy Wright, the Culture Secretary, talked about how he's investing and collaborating with health, with Home Office in prisons, art in schools. He's even putting money into drama in schools. And he suggested that we co-fund this. So basically, also inspired by something I think is coming up in your book this year, how the RSA was funded, where people put a guinea in, and they got their name listed alongside the Lords and the Barons and the Commoners, so it was an inclusive society. And a chap called Gaz Mail, who's got a band in Portobello, he's got a song called Brother Can You Spare a Pound, inspired by the Rudy Valley song Brother Can You Spare a Dime from the Obsession. We have done a thing with The Guardian, whereby The Guardian had gave us one ad a few weeks ago. This Saturday, we have our second full-page ad in The Guardian, and we're asking, you did sign up, didn't you?
Morning.
Thank you for that. So we're asking people to put a pound in the kitty to become not patrons, but patrons with their art, to be a part of this, to be a patron, and we want to list those people. So that's the pitch.
Right. Okay.
What do you think of that, Matthew?
So I think it's fine, but not very good.
I mean, I think you should do it, and you should sign up. And
which bit? Just the paper?
No, look, listen. There'll be one person listening to this, but you basically drive me around the bend, Nick, because you email me all the time, and you make demands on me all the time, you always say, you know, I've organised a massive global conference, and will you help me? And I go back and say, well, when is it? And you say, well, it's actually tomorrow afternoon at 4 o'clock. So, you know, you're completely hopeless, but I'm very fond of you, and I think what you're doing is amazing, and I want you to come to my school and do it for my daughter's school. But the reason I've kept meeting with you, because I thought if I keep meeting with you, I will eventually, because this is what I'm good at, you're good at what you do, and what you do is fantastic, I will eventually have a business model for you. And I've got it now. I now know what your business model should be.
The next podcast, the business model, we'll go on.
I know what you should do, it's come to me. Right. So I'm just about to say something to you that's going to change the world. And when people look back on this podcast, they'll say, remember that time in that podcast where Matthew told Nick the way he should do it, and Nick went, oh wow, and now it's one of the biggest organisations in the world, right?
Go for it, yeah, brilliant. This is exactly what I need.
So what you should do is...
He says sitting back, relaxed.
Is we'll put together, and I'll help you with this, we'll put together a proposal, we'll raise some money, we have to raise some money. You need a chief executive. To be honest, you can't run a piss up in a brewery. I mean, what you do, it's awesome, but when it comes to running an organisation, no way, right? So what we're going to do is we're going to raise you some money.
What bit can I do? Can I still do something?
You do all the creativity, all the thinking, all the brilliance, right? All the brilliance, okay? But you know, look, Mick Jagger didn't arrange the tour.
I don't want to do everything. I don't want to do the detail.
So, you know, you're not Dennis Waterman. You know, just sing the theme tune, right? Right? So, what you need, we're going to raise you some money, and then you need, you know, one person who works alongside you, hasn't got a creative bone in their body, but is totally dedicated on changing this, right? Then, your big question is this, your big problem is this. Can you make anybody else the slightest bit like you? Because the reason I put up with you is because you're just a force of nature. And actually, that's not something you can teach people very easily, right? So, to scale up, there's got to be 100 Nick Horstons, 1,000 Nick Horstons. Yep. That's the thing that's fundamentally going
to
change this.
The first
thing
is to find three, actually. But
to find three, right? Okay, that's your problem. You need many, many Nick Horstons, right? And they'll all be different, because that's the model of B. But they'll all have the same essence that you've got, right? On the other hand, a lot of companies recognise that a problem they've got with their employees is they're not quite creative enough. They're not entrepreneurial enough. They've been working a particular way. Their organisation is a particular way. They want people to be more creative. So what do we do? What we do is we create a training course, you know, 2 days, when you will train people, groups of people, and you will do, what you'll do is you'll say to the company, what happens is this, you'll send those people, you will say to those people, they're going to do 2 days training, and then you're going to allow them, you're going to give them the time off to do, let's say, 20 sessions in schools, 20 half days in schools over the next 2 years. You'll give them time off to do that, and you'll pay their travel expenses to do it, right? And we will do the 2 day course for you. And the deal is, you'll have to give those people up because they go into schools and do amazing stuff, but you will have someone coming back into your organization who's absolutely brimming with it, who's full of stuff, full of ideas, right? The companies will pay you. The companies will pay you to make these people, to excite these people, make them creative. These people will then go into schools, and that will be your mini Nick Horstons. There's your business model. It's done. You do one of those every month, train 50 people every month. Even if you get a dropout rate of 50%, that is going to give you 50. It's going to give you 50 times twice. It's going to give you 300. You know, there'll be 100. Even if it's worse than 100 Nick Horstons a year will come out of this process. And they won't do it forever. They'll do it for a couple of years and they'll move on. But that's how you do it. So I think you can. We can make this happen.
I think that's perfect. Phase two of Steamco is prove sustainability and scale using a model that you've described.
There
the biggest barrier was more me.
Well, there we are.
I mean, I've been looking for 6 organisations to put 50k in and 6 grant bodies to match fund.
If you die tomorrow, by the way, I'm going to put on your tombstone, the biggest barrier was more me's. That's your t-shirt. The biggest barrier is more me's.
I think that feels like a good place to end, actually. More me's. I will start printing t-shirts.
I'm going to make it happen for you, Nick.
Well, I appreciate that.
Well, I'm going to make it happen for you because what you're doing is, in the end, absolutely brilliant.
The question that
we had a good point to finish on. Now you're going to ruin it. You had to have the last word, didn't you?
The question I've been ending podcasts is, what's your art, Mr. X? And I think we'll say that I'm going to answer the question for you, Matthew Taylor. I think your art is just sorting it.
Thank you.
You happy with that?
Very happy.
Thank you very much. Let's have a handshake podcast. Wow, well here I am outside the RSA in John Adams Street. I can't quite believe it. I really can't quite believe it. I've been a fellow of the RSA for 5 years. Had a couple of brief chats with Matthew, and I didn't even set this meeting up to do a podcast, but it seemed like a good idea to do the first one with him. He understands what it is we do. He gets the model. It aligns with what the RSA do in terms of engaging people, community, creativity, society, all those things. And he seems like a man of his word. He's going to help make it happen, which is just off the scale. This is like a dragon's dream come true. So maybe that's what happens when you do a podcast. That's just the first one. Good Lord. So thanks for listening. Thanks for checking out the ArcConnects 19 podcast. As I said there, we'd love to see your name in the Guardian this Saturday, Saturday the 30th of March. We're going to be speaking, I'm going to be giving a speech at the Celebrating Education Conference of the National Education Union. We're going to be giving everybody a copy of the Guardian, and we'd love to see your name on it. So go to the Schemeco website or search for Partron, P-A-R-T-O-N 1919, Partron 19, and chip a quid in. And we'll see your name in the Guardian. Let's be part of this. Be part of the ArcConnects 19 Festival with your art, whatever your art, whether it's cooking, coding, dancing, or like Matthew Taylor, FRSA, the art of sorting it. If you've enjoyed this podcast, log on, sign up, subscribe to it, wherever you get your podcasts, on iTunes, on Spotify or Google, and whatever you do, give it more than one star. I think it goes up to 5. Thanks for listening.